When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it's Sammy here, and this episode of Fulhamish is supported by NordVPN. Now, NordVPN is a way of watching sporting events, TV shows, and films which aren't available where you are by switching your virtual location of your phone, tablet, or laptop to a country which is. Particularly perfect for those 3 p.m. kickoffs which aren't televised in the UK. And right now, you can get an exclusive discount by going to nordvpn.com/fulhamish. Not only will you benefit from their already huge discount, but you'll also get an extra 4 months for free. You can use one account on up to 6 devices. Also, it's completely no risk thanks to Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So to get that special rate plus 4 free months, go to nordvpn.com/fulhamish or hit the link in the description of this podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show. Today, we're going to be previewing Saturday's big West London derby at the G-Tech. Can we get our first ever win at Brentford's new stadium? Can we right the wrongs of that 3-0 earlier in the season? It would be absolutely lovely if we can. Potentially the cherry on top of what's been a pretty positive campaign otherwise. Also in this podcast, we're going to be discussing Friday's season ticket price reveal. Also, we've got a few emails. And at the end, a live edition of This'll Catch On recorded at the Half Moon Putney on Saturday. It is an absolute belter. Make sure you stay until the end of the podcast. I'm joined, though, for parts one and two by Jack Collins. Hello.
Hello, Sammy. How you doing?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. We're remote today. We're not in a studio because there's only
half
an hour or so to record. Plus, you weren't about around on Wednesday when we normally record. So, I'm not used to this. I'm normally used to seeing your beaming face in the studio, but alas, needs must sometimes.
Indeed, it is odd, isn't it? And it's weird how you get used to something so quickly. But we'll get through it. We'll make sure it works, and plenty to discuss, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't got an awful lot more to add to Saturday's game against Palace. I think that Fulham were second best for much of the game. I think that we got the point. I think it was just about a fair point, but certainly Palace did a lot more in the game to try and win it. But I think when Fulham were in the position at 1-0, had chances to make it 2, it's easy to still come away from the game feeling a bit like, oh, we actually could have won that, even though it would have been daylight robbery, I think, had we seen that over the line.
Yeah, you'd say it was probably a point that would have erred on Palace's side of feeling more frustrated than ours, if you will. But yeah, I take your point. I wasn't there, obviously, at the weekend. I was in Naples watching Napoli-Roma, which was a far more scintillating affair. But having watched it back, there wasn't loads to like about the first half. It felt like Fulham were very lethargic getting out of the blocks. It's not the first time I've said that, but it did just feel like one of those kind of opportunities. And you look back at it and you think Fulham had started a bit faster and been able to deal with Palace's press a little bit better, we would have been able to work some openings. And I think you see that João Paulinho thread through for Muniz in the end of the first half and think, well, if those gaps were opening up, surely they were there from the start, especially with Palace's press more ferocious from the off, I think, than it was by that point. So it's frustrating that we couldn't find a way to work our way through that, but we weathered the storm. I enjoy that we used a little bit of the tactics that Newcastle used against us, with Bernd Leno going down with an injury while we kind of calmed things down.
The best part about the Bernd Leno injury was the fact that it started off as a shoulder injury and then quickly became a leg injury by the time that the physios were on the pitch. You also blatantly saw Bassi tell him with his kind of like hand over his mouth, but you could obviously see what was being instructed to go down. It was quite blatant, to be perfectly honest, but
look, I don't like the rules, but with the way the rules are, like, more and more clubs have realised that this is the kind of get out of jail card.
A little bit of gamesmanship never went amiss. I think that's it's worth utilising if everybody else is utilising it. You've got to try and get yourself on a level footing the best way you can. And it really did help, I think. Fulham looked far more in control and composed after that little break, and just felt like the early storm, as I said, had been weathered at that point. Fulham started to find their feet a little bit and play out. There was, you know, I thought the second half was improved. I thought that we were better in the second half. But, you know, sometimes you concede a goal like that and you're like, there's not much you can really do about that kind of strike. If it had felt incredibly undeserved, they would have left a bitter taste, I think, but it didn't in terms of the way that the two teams set about. It's a decent point against a Palace side on the up. But yeah, maybe Fulham coming out of the blocks faster, especially when Palace had a midweek game, might have been able to kind of shift that a little bit and shift the tide of it. But in many ways, it was what it was.
Yeah, I mean, if we were having to do kind of like predictions for next season, based on what I saw on Saturday, I would potentially have Palace pretty high up the league. If Glasner is able to sign a couple of players that like fit his system.
And keep a couple of players, I think maybe might be the key one.
Yeah, then like, wow. Like, I honestly, that first half, as much as Fulham weren't brilliant, it was like watching a good European team come to the Cottage, where you were like, whoa, okay, these guys are different levels to what we're used to. And considering the caliber of team we've had come to the Cottage this year, the fact that one of the most impressive teams at our famous old ground was Crystal Palace. And especially considering what they were just a couple of months ago under Roy, who we all love. But yeah, Glasner's come in and done a terrific job there at Palace.
Good coach.
Jack, before we discuss Brentford, I think that 5 or 10 minutes on the big announcement last week about Fulham's season ticket renewal prices wouldn't go amiss. I think that there had been a conspiracy that I wasn't bought into at first, but the longer it went on, I started to buy it, that the club weren't going to announce this until after the Manchester City game, mm-hmm. In order to avoid protests. In the end, they actually revealed it last week. And on the face of it, a 4% rise, you know, we're quick to criticise. I think a 4% rise is pretty reasonable. There is some devil in the detail here that I think is concerning and we'll get to. But on the face of it, I'm thinking about my season ticket, H4. It was £650 last year. It's gone up to £676. I mean, would have I loved a price freeze? Yes, but something pretty much tied to the rate of inflation doesn't feel like a massive crime that we all need to be up in arms about. And I think overall, the reaction to the prices have been pretty positive.
Yeah, and rightly so. 4% rise is, yeah, obviously we would have liked it to be zero, but a 4% rise seems pretty reasonable. It's easy to forget that obviously we've seen two big price jumps in the last couple of years. So the 4% rise on top of that is still, you know, we're still compared to where the season tickets were, you know, the last time we were in the Premier League, for example, is quite a significant and steep increase still. But equally, in terms of where we were, this is okay as a step. So I'm not hugely wound up about it. There's a couple of things, as you say, that are very frustrating. The thing that's got me, and I don't really know how it's going to work, because Fulham had 17,000 or nearly 17,000 season tickets sold last year. And they've now capped season tickets at 15,000, despite the fact that they've also said that everyone's ticket is available to renew until the end of May. So I'm not sure how that works. I'm not sure if they just get to 15,000 and they say, sorry, season tickets are sold out now, you've missed your spot. But equally, if you've already got a seat guaranteed, I'm not quite sure how that adds up. So it's a bit confusing that they seem to be thinking like a 10, 11% drop-off rate is just be the norm for it. I think it's even more confusing than they're like, well, you can join a waiting list for a season ticket. I don't know if this is a sense of just trying to add some exclusivity or the like, or they just want have more tickets to sell, you know, game by game basis. That's the bit that really irked me, I think, yeah. About it, not necessarily any of the rest of it. And again, as you say, quick to criticize, I'm quick to say that also that 4% rise seems pretty reasonable in line with inflation, etc. So That's the one I'm very confused about. And I don't really know what to say more than I don't understand how the maths is mathing, if you will, because, you know, if everyone's seat is guaranteed, then surely there can't be a 15,000 season ticket cap.
Well, I'm going to guess. So I have read before that there is always a churn. There is always, and I think the Supporters Trust has said it's somewhere between 5 and 10% churn every year, or 5 to 10% of people who don't renew. So I'm going to guess that the club is banking on that happening because it does every year. And then they're just not going to put those season tickets that don't get renewed basically back up for sale unless more than 2,000 people don't renew. And then maybe a few hundred might be available to those who have put themselves on the waiting list.
Capping it at 50% of capacity seems wild.
If for example, only 1,500 people didn't renew, I'm going to assume that the football club sees this. Okay, right, we'll try again next year to get down to 15,000. I don't think they're going to be like, I don't think there's going to be some sort of Hunger Games selection where 500 people lose their season ticket just so they got a cap.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Although, would I put anything past Fulham? Probably not that. I think though that however they achieve this is one thing. I think the fact that they're doing it though, I think it's a very underhand and slightly concerning point of the direction of travel. Lots of people have said for a while that it doesn't feel like season tickets are good for business, as along with Fulham's kind of model of wanting to attract high paying one-off match goers. And yeah, this is the first step along that road. The fact that we are increasing the amount of seats in the ground because the Riverside is opening more and more next season, yet decreasing the amount of season ticket holders is, yeah, not a direction of travel that I'm particularly happy about, because I think it's just proving what we've been saying all along, that loyal fans are not really part of the roadmap, that they don't see that as the best way of raising funds and getting us towards this quote-unquote sustainability. They see that as the people coming to London, people paying high one-off match ticket prices. And I can't believe, to be perfectly honest, that we are, as you say, increasing the amount of seats, decreasing the amount of season ticket holders. We still struggle to sell out this ground each week. It's not like, apart from maybe the Liverpool game, that for any game, you can't basically get tickets on the week of the match. But maybe that's the model. You know, that's what they want in the NFL, isn't it? Like 90% is the target, because you want tickets to be available on the day at high prices so that people are available to go last minute. I think we're seeing a real Americanization of the way that Fulham sell tickets. And I know we've got a lot of listeners in America. It's, you know, you guys...
It's not necessarily a criticism. It's just the direction of travel.
Yeah, that's my two cents. And I think out of all of the things and a couple of other bits to go on to, I do think this 15,000 is a real, yeah, it's been kind of lost in the 4% rise, but I think it's the most concerning bit of it for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. I know some people have been a little bit up in arms about digital tickets and what that means for people who share season tickets amongst family or friends or whatever that looks like. I feel like there will be a way. I was originally quite skeptical, but having sort of done a little bit of digging into it, etc., does feel like actually that will be okay. This 15K definitely feels like the big thing for me. 50% of capacity is an incredibly low number, yeah, compared to the rest of the Premier League for season tickets. And, you know, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, when you spoke about the churn and all of that, it makes sense. But a waiting list for season tickets is a weird thing, because people will go on there and then they'll be like, by the time that maybe those season tickets become available, they might not want them anymore. And that's a very strange kind of thing to do, to say someone who says, okay, I'll give you a set amount of money for an entire season, I'll have this seat. You'd think that the more of that, you know, I appreciate that from a club financial perspective, being able to sell at 3-4 times the cost for every single match day might offset that loss. That's fine. But as we keep banging on about, it's about building a fan base, building a loyal and retainable fan base for if things do go wrong, because we know that those tickets that are available and for people who are coming in, and that's fine. Also, you know, I've made this point before, but I'm going to make it again. It's absolutely grand to have tickets available for people coming into the city to go and watch a game. I literally did it this weekend in Naples, right? But if the fans of Napoli were sitting there telling me, oh, we've been priced out because people are coming to watch these games, I would feel bad for them in the same way that I feel bad for us in this situation. So, yeah, it's uncomfortable. And I think it is a point of direction of travel more than anything else. So, yeah, tough.
It's not going back to the core point. I still maintain it. Fulham don't have a big enough fan base. We don't sell out allocations. There are not enough Fulham fans in the world. And if anything, now there's another step of difficulty in order to become a Fulham fan. Yeah. It's difficult in the first place because the tickets are expensive in the first instance, so you're less likely to go. And even now, if you do get hooked, there's no season tickets to buy. So, or there's a long waiting list now. And that is the case at other clubs, but we have artificially made it difficult.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like other clubs.
It's not the Arsenal waiting list, right? That's fine. There is obviously a massive demand for season tickets, especially given recent successes, which is fine. But equally, that's not a massaged number, right? They haven't been cutting down the season tickets so that the waiting list goes up. Fulham feel like they are doing that. And artificially massaging the numbers to be like, oh, look, we're exclusive, you have to go on a waiting list, is not the way to build a fan base up that has so much direct competition within a very small area.
Yeah. I think one other thing that I thought particularly bad, and I really feel uncomfortable about it, and I spoke to a few people over the weekend who are in this boat. So people that renewed last year, that bought their season ticket new for this season,
yeah,
will have paid about, on average, something like £150 more for their ticket because they didn't get the renewal price, they got the new customer price. Now, the 4% rise that's been introduced, at first I thought, okay, well, in some ways, some people that bought their season tickets this season will actually almost get a reduction down to this renewal price, and they don't. It's 4% on top of the new price. So now there's this like two-tiered pricing system as to when you bought a season ticket. I kind of got the logic of, yeah, okay, new customer, renewal price, that kind of makes sense. You got to, you know, pay a little bit, the barrier to entry is a bit high. I don't love it, but that's kind of how it is. But for now there to be, and who knows what the new season ticket price is going to be. So suddenly we're like,
well, there won't be one, so it doesn't matter.
Well, probably not, but there might be even higher price for them. They haven't announced that. But even the fact that there's a two-tier system as to when you basically bought your season ticket, someone next to you might be paying quite substantially amount more, you know, and there are some people in the Hammersmith then, I'm paying £676, paying £830 for the exact same seat. Feels weird. Just
the per
game price of that is about £43-44, which is pretty high considering you're committing to a season ticket. You're paying what I used to think was a, you know, pretty high per match rate. I know that like things have gone up since then. So I think that like, on the face of it, as a long-time season ticket holder, 4% on its own, fine. But I think when you add in the context of existing price rises beforehand, the 15,000, and then this kind of like new two-tier pricing, I still think there's a lots of questions here. And I think that this is something that the Fulham Supporters Trust will almost certainly get tucked into on their next meeting, if they're allowed to have one. I think for me, all very valid questions. And it's why I didn't instantly go out and tweet anything about season tickets, because I was actually like, look, I want to get a little bit beneath the skin of this because it's not all as it seems for me. So I think there's good and bad to the season ticket prices. Right, we'll take a break there afterwards. We'll look ahead to Brentford on Saturday. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy here with Jack Collins. Thank you to Green King Sport for backing the Thursday Club this season. Green King Sport pubs are the best place to watch all the big matches during the run-in of the season. Obviously, there's big matches to come up in the title race, the relegation race. There's big cup finals, semi-finals. There's the Champions League next week. If you want to go and watch the action, head to your local Green King Sport pub. They'll have all the matches on their big HD TVs. Plus, if you download the Green King Sport app, not only will you get access to exclusive discounts and competitions, you'll also be able to get discounts off your drinks anytime that there's any televised sport on the box. From a Fulham point of view, our match next weekend against Manchester City, Saturday 12:30, is on the telly. So if you can't head down to the cottage, head to your local Green King Sport pub, get a discount on your drinks. Happy days. But yeah, thank you very much to Green King for sponsoring the Thursday Club this season. Jack, Brentford v Fulham isn't on the telly this Saturday. And whilst I understand the reasonings for that, I think they're missing a little bit of a trick, because I think this is going to be a pretty heated one at the G-Tech. Fulham, I feel like there's a lot riding on it for us. I feel like this is the biggest match remaining in our season. The obvious other match is Manchester City, because we could potentially have a say in the title race. But for me, if you offered me the chance to win any of these games by a million miles, yeah, I am choosing this one, because getting one over that lot is always sweet, particularly when you add the context of what happened earlier in the season, which was such a horrible day, particularly as we also found out that we saw Mitrovic on that day. It really was a double whammy of a Saturday. I just love it. Absolutely love it if we beat them.
Yeah, it would really put the, as you said at the right at the top of the podcast, right? It would really put the cherry on the cake of what has been, I think, a surprisingly good season from a Fulham perspective. And it's, you know, an opportunity to just finally sort of put this one to rest and get that win at the G-Tech. Obviously, it's been an uncomfortable place for us to go. We lost there. I remember the first game we played there in was in the League Cup. We're in yellow. We were in the Premier League. They were in the Championship. We lost that one. We ended up getting relegated that season. They ended up getting promoted. And since then, it's been a bit of a... It's just got a bit of a hold over us. But it's a funny game.
It's only been two games, in fairness.
I know, but it's just a funny game in that they tend to have... I know, obviously, we won the game at Craven Cottage last year. But Brentford feels like a game that seems to have had our number, home and away, really, for quite some time. And I think that when you look at this game, there was a real chance at one point that it looked like there was going to be a lot riding on it in terms of survival. I think at the start of the season, you would probably, or definitely after the reverse fixture, you might have looked at it, and I think a lot of Brentford fans were looking at it and going, could we relegate them? You know, recent months, we've been thinking, oh, is there a chance we throw Brentford back into the relegation scrap and potentially put them right amongst it in the final day? It looks like, you know, obviously neither of those things are going to happen. Both teams relatively comfortably safe now at this point. And it does feel like maybe a little bit of the sting of the game in that regard is taken out of it. But there's a lot of pride on the line here. And you know, we spoke about the Palace game and not starting quickly enough. And we've spoken the last couple of weeks about Fulham being on the beach at times. If Fulham aren't off the beach for this one, then you kind of wonder what it needs to actually get them off the beach. Because this is the last defining game. And you can say, as you say, the City game might end up defining the title race. The Luton game might end up defining whether they stay up. But if you offered us any of them, this is the game that every single Fulham fan would take the 3 points in. There is also slightly, I mean, I think it's probably a long shot given that Brentford lost at the weekend to Everton. But if they were to win all three of their games remaining, Fulham to lose all three of ours, they would finish above us. So it would be good to put that to rest as well. Just make sure that it's all just seen out relatively serenely at the end of the season. There's less yap coming from down the road at TWA. So, yeah, I mean, I think it should be a good game. I think it should have a fair bit of spice in it. It's going to be interesting to see how Brentford line up. They switched recently from that five at the back formation to a four. We've seen Ivan Toney miss a couple of games and then come back in for the game against Everton. And obviously that was the first one that they've lost compared to the two against Luton and Sheffield United. So interesting to see how Thomas Frank plays this. But I think that on paper, these are two relatively well-matched sides and two teams that will probably come out and have a go at each other here, I think.
Yeah, and Brentford, I mean, the time to really play Brentford was probably a month or so ago when they were really got in a proper little rut, didn't they? I mean, they had seven defeats in nine in kind of from late January. Yeah,
they won one in nine, didn't they?
Yeah, through to kind of mid-March. Then they went on a series of draws as well. They really were struggling to win games. Obviously, I think a team like Sheffield United comes to the GTEC almost at the perfect time, right? You know, like this kind of walking wounded, what's the point in them? Sheffield United, and look, we struggled against them, didn't we? But they managed to kind of get that 2-0 win. And I think ever since then, they were safe, really. They only needed one win just to kind of see them over the line. I mean, they obviously lost to Everton, but again, they had their chances in this game. I mean, I'm just always nervous against them because this team always seems to be fairly well matched against us. There's certain teams that I think like we play well against and don't play well against. And Brentford's always been one where I think Fulham has struggled. But then again, there's been other teams this season that I would have said, okay, we're never normally very good against Spurs. We kind of managed to overcome that. So I think that like on our day, this Fulham team can beat this Brentford team 100%, but we've got to sort the they've got to be up for this, because I think if they're not, and we've got kind of like, you know, Stoke 2.0 throwing long balls at us, the atmosphere inside the GTEC, it could get quite messy quite quickly if we're not like just up for it. And I know that's quite an old cliched thing to say, that like, you know, it's not about necessarily attitude, but I think it's got to be a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that in terms of, you know, quality on the pitch and quality on the ball, again, you'd say there's not loads between the two sides, right? You'd say that there are the gifted technicians on both sides. You'd say that there are some big physical presences on both sides, both ends of the pitch. It like should on paper be a relatively, you know, solid matchup in terms of you look at these two teams, and on paper, this is a level and competitive fixture, but in recent times we haven't been able to kind of levy that against Brentford. So it's going to be interesting to see what Marco Silva does here, whether he sticks with what happened against Palace, whether he sticks with that team. I'd imagine there's a few changes, but you know, the likes of Willian, who obviously came on against Palace, and you'd want to start in a pick 11 Fulham team. If you were picking everyone flat from across the squad, and it does look like Marco Silva has a clean bill of health to work with here, you'd say, well, Willian starts. But equally, when he came off the bench at the weekend, I thought he was a little bit muted and didn't really do very much with the ball. So there becomes this kind of question of what, you know, what Fulham turns up. And I think it's quite important for this Fulham to be combative. I think I'd be tempted to go with João Palhinha and Harrison Reed again, and have that as a, you know, a partnership in the middle to try and, you know, deal with the energy that this Brentford midfield possesses. It's a midfield I really like, and I know it sounds really, you know, grim when you're talking about the opposition and a rival, but I think Norgaard and Jensen are two of the most criminally underrated players in the Premier League. I think they're both absolutely brilliant. But, you know, you need to be able to combat that in the middle. Andreas's work rate should help with that, and being able to drag Norgaard around a little bit in that deeper position. Palhinha in there, Reed in there, I think will give you the energy needed to fight in there and make the difference. But then it becomes a question of how do you get them? And this is a game that I can see Mooney's enjoying, because I thought he was good against Palace again. And that's a tricky fixture. I thought he held the ball up well. I thought he brought us into play well. I thought he drew fouls well. This Pinnock and Collins partnership feels like one that he also might get some joy out of. I think Ethan Pinnock's excellent, but Nathan Collins has been a little bit all over the shop at times this season. If Mooney's can get into those areas, and if Willian does play on the left and can get at Christopher Ayer, who is very much not a right back by trade, he's doing a good job there, but not a right back by trade, can we get joy down that flank? I think it's very possible. So I'm excited in some ways. I'm also nervous. And obviously, this is another familial one for me, in that they're half the family, or my aunt at the very least, is a big Bees fan. So it's always good to just get the quieten that down, please, element of everything happening. But yeah, I am weirdly excited and nervous at the same time.
Yeah, I think the one for me is I would like to see Willian come back in. He kind of was eased back in against Palace. I'd like to see him on the left. I'd still like to see a Wilson getting the opportunity on a right, but it doesn't feel like he's in Marco's like thinking or vision. But I thought that Wilson came on and was decent against Palace as well. I just would really like to see it. For me, Iwobi is just... The only time I did think Iwobi did all right on Saturday was when he had to drop into midfield, and then I thought, actually, okay, we saw a little bit more of Iwobi and I thought he was better. But just for me on the wings, I just feel like we're missing something, and I really would like to see Harry get a shot on the right. I'm not sure what more he has to do. I know that like he has fluffed opportunities, and I never think more about that, the Chelsea game where I was like, oh, come on, Harry, you got given a start and you were so poor.
Yeah.
But I just really like to see him like have a proper go at this team. The middle for me, yeah, I think it's much of a muchness now between Reed and Lukic. I don't think this is the game for Kearney to start. Yeah, Reed, Lukic, for me, it's toss of a coin. And I assume at the back, Jack, we're probably going to stick with Diop partnering Bassey. He got better in the second half. Marco said that. He said he was rusty in the first half, but he did get better in the second. And now that Tosin... it was weird that Marco kind of after the game was like, oh, yeah, if I want to play him, I'll play him. I was like, you're not going to play him, are you?
That's fine. You've got to say things like that, don't you? If he came out and was like, he's not going to play at all, and then freak injury next week and he had to come back in, then obviously you don't want to have been like, I'm not going to play him. So that's fine. That's just doing the rounds. I'm not worried about that. I think it would be Diop again. I also think that matches up quite nicely against Ivan Toney. He's very good in the air. And I imagine they'll stick with him in this game. But, you know, we've got to be aware and alert in terms of how we go about this and how Brentford do decide to switch up this attacking, you know, pattern, because they weren't as good, I don't think, at the weekend as they have been in recent times, especially in that front three. It looked very good when it was fluid, I thought, against Luton. And they had Lewis Potter drifting off one wing, Wissa normally through the middle, but places with Buemo. A lot of it was very sharp and very smart, and actually without that fluidity I think it lost a little bit of its aspect. So if they do decide that they're going to play a quicker, shorter and more direct kind of front three, Fulham have to be able to adapt to deal with that, and that's when that would get very, very interesting for me, I think.
Yeah, and I think also at the G-Tech it's a place that you need to calm down, isn't it? Like it's an intense crowd. It's intense style of play by
Brentford.
It's
a bit on top of you, right, as well. Like, it's similar in some ways, and it's not similar to the Cottage in the way that it looks, but in terms of the crowd being on top of the pit and it all being very intimate and close, there are similarities there that you can see that when the Cottage gets going and it feels like it's on top of you, I imagine that's difficult for players. I imagine it's very similar at the G-Tech.
Yeah, and you have to deal with that stupid stadium announcer.
Yeah, the less said, the better, I think.
There's something about it. I don't know why I didn't enjoy the lot. I mean, I know that we lost, which is why I didn't enjoy it. But I mean, like, it's easy to get to. And that's about all I could say for it in terms of enjoying the G-Tech.
Yeah, I mean, it's really easy to get to for me. I can walk there, but it's a funny one in that it's a strange stadium. Obviously, the new element of it feels a bit odd. But I do think it has its advantages. And I think that when it gets going, it really does. And it's done well in terms of sound design and all of those things. You know, you can knock it for various issues, but actually the in-game experience itself inside the stadium is pretty solid as far as I'm concerned. So it's a funny old place to go. We just need Fulham. You know, this is a knife-edge game. As long as both teams are at it, I think there's absolutely zero question that Brentford will be at it. It's a question of whether Fulham can rise to that occasion and not be, you know, left chasing shadows early on, because I think that could be a death knell.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we'll leave it there for the Brentford preview. Fingers crossed that Fulham can get the job done on Saturday. We're going to take a break there. Please. Afterwards, we'll get into our live rendition of This'll Catch On, live from the Half Moon Putney. Hello and welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. We are live here at the Half Moon Putney, and this'll Catch On. Hey! I am joined on stage by Paddy Barclay, hey! George Cooper, hey! And the one and only Dom Betts. Hey!
Good. I want a boost.
All right.
Dom Betts.
So This'll Catch On has become a regular fixture for us every time that we do the live show, and it is a big part of the Thursday Club. Paddy asked me just at the end of part two when we recorded, he said, what's This'll Catch On?
Brace yourself.
So brace
there's
yourself.
There's a reason you don't invite me on this section most of the time.
So, Paddy, I'll introduce you to it. And anyone potentially who's never heard This'll Catch On before, this is the part of the show where Fulhamish listeners send in a potential chance with the dream of getting them sung by the Hammersmith End. They Bring never do.
No, we've had maybe like two.
We've had a couple.
I think that represents a 0.01% success rate.
It's not zero. So.
So today we've got some brilliant chants sent in from people hoping that their little ditty will become adored by the masses. And the first one today is for someone who was a big topic on the podcast that we recorded, Anthony Robinson. So this email says, "Hey there, Fulhamish. My name is Nassim from Los Angeles, California. Been following Fulham since the Dempsey era, and ever since I discovered your podcast, I've been a loyal listener. I'm so glad you decided to bring back This Will Catch On, because listening to all the songs that people come up with brings me so much joy. Surprised that there hasn't been a song for our American acrobat, Anthony Robinson. And after the Spurs game, I think one is definitely deserved. Please consider my submission, inspired by the song Gloria by Laura Branigan."
Fucking hell, man.
Nassim says, "I wanted to give a special shout out to my friends Jack and Louis Meeling for helping me come up with some of the lyrics and taking me to my first game at the Cottage last May. Not sure this will actually catch on, but it was fun to come up with nonetheless." So this is from Nassim.
Robinson, Robinson, he's running up and down the pitch, down the pitch. He's intercepting everything, everything, and he's barely breaking a sweat. No team has an answer for our fullback. Oh, go Robinson.
It's a nice little ditty from the scene.
Yes.
Dom?
No. Well, to start with, I'm not going to have a song that's related to Robinson anyway, because everyone knows that I just don't rate him anyway. But that's my outtake from the last section. But no. Just the answer's no. I don't know what the question is, but the answer's no.
George, is your answer no?
It's a strange world and we live in that Dom Betts has managed to embody
manifest
the sort of
myself.
Simon Cowell of this panel.
This is why you don't invite me on this section of the podcast.
I liked it. I thought beautiful, really nice voice. Probably one of the best singers that we've ever had on This Will Catch On.
That sums you up.
I don't think it's going to catch on. Robinson.
It's got one. It's got too much words for Fulham fans to really catch on.
There you go. Dom Betts, too much words.
Too much words. Paddy, did you think it was too much words?
I think as an expert of delivering too much words, I would like to say that. Yeah, no, when I listened to it, I was naturally skeptical, but I think it's good. I think it will catch on. My partner, who has just arrived belatedly, she never likes to miss a second of my performances. But when I took her to Fulham matches about a year ago, the player that she rightly identified as, although I think she fancied him, basically. So naturally, I'm kind of against him, but I think the song is great. I think the song is great, and I think it should catch on, and I would like to hear the Hammy End sing it.
Okay. The next one is for Rodrigo Muniz. This email says, "Hello, Fulhamish, long-time listener, first-time messenger. I'm an awful singer, so I'm sure this will be a delight. A song in honour of Fulham's Brazilian R9, to the tune of Copacabana. I've listened to the pod from the very start and eagerly await each new episode. Keep up the great work," and that's from Khalid. So, yeah, this is a bit of Barry Manilow on the pod.
His name's Rodrigo, Rodrigo Muniz. We sent him out alone where he couldn't get a goal. And then there's Marco working his magic. Fulham's new R9, scoring goals all the time. Across the crowded box, Muniz is Fulham's fox. Our samba star, who could ask for more? His name's Rodrigo, who? Rodrigo Muniz. We sent him out alone, where he couldn't get a goal. And then there's Marco, working his magic. Brazilians assassins are always in fashion at the cottage. You'll fall in love.
You don't need to ask.
I mean, it's a hit with the crowd. Yeah. Is it a hit with you, Paddy?
I'm with the crowd. I love it.
You're very much the Louis Walsh of this panel, aren't you?
It's great. I love it.
George, the Sharon Osbourne.
Too much words. No, it was brilliant. No comments.
Okay. Yeah. And Dom?
Nah, that's class, that is. Yeah! I mean, it's the only thing to make it better is it was to a tune of the Venger Boys, but I mean, you know, that's me picking, that's me picking nits out of a haystack.
You're not a Barry Manilow fan, Dom?
I mean, you ask me about music, man. Like,
if it's not the manor,
If it's not the manor, if it's not the enemy, and it's not Charlemagne Bella Blossoms, I mean, I don't really know. So
there we go. But yeah, top notch.
All right, the next one. This says, "Dear Fulhamish, greetings from Australia. Sam here. You might remember me as the more enigmatic and less geriatric version member of the That's So Craven podcast. My brother Jack and Father Elton being the aforementioned. As I have a reputation to uphold as the greatest Fulham songsmith of the Berenzi family, you can imagine my blind rage and fury when I heard that my father Elton reached number 2 in the official This'll Catch On Fulhamish Charts episode last season for his lackluster reimagining of Angels by Robbie Williams, which went, I'm João Polinha, you're dead. It was good. To rectify this heinous wrong, please see attached my less geriatric, majestically superior rework of Ronan Keating's When You Say Nothing At All. Oh, I was particularly inspired by Luc de Fougerolles' pre-season performances and the name de Fougerolles itself. It was the perfect inspiration for a song, and I can genuinely hear it being drunkenly screamed in the cottage stands. So this is from Sam.
Fucking verse. It's amazing how you can speak right to my heart. While Tim Ream's been down, you were chosen to start. Passes you make are the best I've seen. It's so crazy you're just 17. The smile on my face, dreary passes like pages. You're a youth, but it seems like you've been here for ages. Wherever you are, he will catch you. You have the ball.
Everyone,
you never beat Luc de Fougerolles. You seem to have so craving for my
Dom, will go straight to you.
I'm getting emotional even here. It's almost as good as like 3,000 England fans singing Hallelujah in the middle of fucking North Macedonia. No, that is sensational, and I think he deserves an MBE for that, personally.
Can Australians get MBEs?
They can do now.
Oh, okay. George?
It's down to my decision.
Okay, again, good. It just really makes me think that when I was 17 years old, I was scrabbling change I found down the back of the sofa at the Golden Lion, trying to use a fake ID to get served, whereas Luc de Fougerolles at 17 is having 100 people at the Half Moon Bar singing his name to his song, to a Ronan Keating tune. I mean, like, yeah, perfect.
What a bloke.
Yeah, yeah. Can't get much better than that.
Patrick, are you a bit of a Ronan Keating fan?
How could you tell?
I
I was crying before he was. Yeah, I mean, obviously I like the song, but I think the words are great as well. I don't know the player that well, but it's fantastic. I mean, they're just getting better and better, and I think the point of this part of the show is to reduce the whole panel to tears. in a nice way.
Yeah. Well, you said that it's getting better and better. Mm.
It's about to get worse.
Yeah. Who knows? That's up to everyone else. This next one says, "Hi, Fulhamish lads." There's lasses as well, but this one says, "Hi, Fulhamish lads. Sick and tired of hearing songs for the same old players, so I thought I'd switch it up a bit to the tune of the 2000s pop classic Reach by S Club 7. Please give a shout out to my dad, Jacques, because he'll appreciate this one. It's from O Monty. It is for the slightly forgotten Tyrese Francois.
So, we're Luda Fischer and Tyrese Francois.
EA Sports may rate you at 62, and you've been loaned away, but we're thinking of you when we see you tear up the Danish league from 1,000 miles away. Know that we'll recall you. We've got a secret midfielder, good in possession, small in stature. Never, ever forget that we never lost when you play this season. Tyrese Francois, loaned out but still desired. Tyrese Francois, subbed on when Reed gets tired. Tyrese Francois, your brother used to play for Fulham too, but you're a cottage shockeroo.
Oh, man, that is...
Paddy, a bit of S Club 7, just to make it a much more classy event. What did you think of that song for our cottage shockeroo?
And you know, we said it's getting better and better, and this has kind of bucked the trend, in my opinion.
You know he's right.
George?
It was the line, good in possession but small in stature. Sort of lyrical genius that's normally reserved for the likes of Bob Dylan, but nah. not for me, I'm afraid.
I mean, Dom, as a frequent purveyor of pop world all across the country...
What one do you want to go into? I mean,
this is a song that frequently would come up in pop world, so I'd have thought Up Your Street.
Yeah, I can see that ringing around the streets of Adelaide in a main square. No, honestly, if that was for an England player, I reckon everyone would be like, oh, what a song. But because Tyrese Francois, I don't think everybody cares. Oh,
okay. Next one is... Boo. Next one is from Julie. Says, hello, frequent listener, frequent emailer.
What is frequent? No, define frequent. What does that mean? How often does she listen?
More often than infrequent.
Yeah, I'll tell you that.
Okay. Julie says, I know that strikers and midfielders get the glory and often get the songs, but our hard-working defenders should have songs too. Mm. This one is for Tim Castagna to the tune... To the tune of Rehab by Amy Winehouse. So, let's see how this one goes.
They tried to keep past Tim Castagna, and he said no, no, no. He plays left and right, back and overlaps on attack. He ain't slow, slow, slow. Hellas Pindikas, he just blocked your pass. They tried to keep past Tim Castagna, and he said no, no, no.
It had the street atmos.
Right. What motorway is she on? Like, Like, she's actually standing on a dual carriageway. Like, I would love to know where she recorded that.
So as you're walking home, you get hit by a moment of inspiration. You think, I'm going to get my voice
it's
out.
It's like she's between the shut junction of the N25 the other week. Like...
You tried to get past Tim Castagna and he said no, no, no. It works.
What do you think, Daddy? That's unacceptable.
We can work on the recording quality, though. We can build down, you know, well, it's all about the initial
ideas. I think it's disgraceful.
Get Mark Ronson on the phone, yeah. We'll get some...
get Rick Rubin.
No, I thought it was terrible.
Okay, Paddy?
As people have noted, production values, 2 out of 10. If you take into account content, 3 out of 10. No, okay. I don't think it's going to catch on.
Well, George, any final words?
No further comments.
That says it all.
No further comments. All right. The last one is a classic from recent weeks. I'm sure you all know which one it might be. For Rodrigo Muniz, to the tune of You Can't Always Get What You Want by the Rolling Stones. It deserves one more play in front of a live audience. Big up to Eddie Kirkland from Atlanta. Because this, as Jack said, is the bar right here.
Well, I saw Mitrovic in his reception. And I knew he would make this decision and leave us for the Saudi sands. So we went down to the Mexicanos to find us a man we could believe. But after 5 goals and 10 Rabonas, oh, Marco played the ace right up his sleeve. He said, you can't always get what you want. No, you can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But give Marco time and you might find Rodrigo Muniz. So I went down to the Chelsea chairman to get my roster filled. I was standing in line to see Mr. Bowley. Man, did he look pretty ill. We decided to have us a loaner. £4 million we gotta spend. Oh, Rodrigo, he just smiled and looked at Brolin. He said, you can sit your ass down on the bench. He said, you can't always get what you want.
Dom, final words on Eddie Kirkland's sensational.
Yeah, it's alright, isn't it?
Yeah. George?
I feel the cyclical nature of the world that we live in means that as we stand on the very stage that the Rolling Stones once played, believe it or not, I wonder what Mick Jagger would have to say about that. I've got a feeling that he'd be pretty happy. Yeah.
Paddy, final word?
Well, I'm not too bothered about Mick Jagger, but I mean, I think that It's more of an epic poem than a chant. But having said that, I mean, we all love it. We absolutely love it. And it ends with a name, you know, like the Polinia chant. Absolutely brilliant with a bit of trimming.
Can we run the food or something?
And that'll do for the live version of This Will Catch On today. Yay! Big thank you to my guests, to Tom Betts, George Cooper, Paddy Barkley. Thank you. And Sammy James.
Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. Hope you enjoyed the live version of This Will Catch On. Jack, you were missed, but it was a bit of a classic. You'll have to be make sure you're around for the next one.
Exactly. Well, I'm glad to be able to listen back to it and enjoy it for what it was worth. I very much enjoyed the live podcast. So I'm looking forward to listening to part three.
Yeah. Thank you so much to everyone that came on Saturday. The live shows have really become like a fixture in what we do. We're looking to try and do a couple per year. They're really fun, and it's just such a great way of interacting with you who listens to this podcast each and every week. It's lovely to have a beer with you afterwards. I had far too many beers afterwards. I was not in a great state on Sunday morning. But yeah, it was a really, really enjoyable evening. Thank you to everyone who came down to the Half Moon. And thank you for listening to today's podcast. Thank you to Jack Collins for being here.
Thank you for having me, Sammy. Always a pleasure.
And let's hope Fulham can do the business.
Please.
In the derby.
Please just win. Just win, please.
We'll be back at some point on Monday with all the reaction to everything that happens in the Brentford game. And for a more instant reaction, make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. We'll be doing a quick take from West London. Come what may, it'll be a tough one if we lose, and it'll be an exuberant one if we win. So yeah, subscribe to the YouTube channel for the more instant reaction to Saturday's game. Have a lovely bank holiday weekend, and let's hope we can get 3 points to go along with it. You whites.
You whites.